the universe, accepting change is hard. Everything's bad and it's getting worse, but not in my backyard.
Well, hello everyone.
How is everybody doing tonight?
Thank you for coming out. It's a rainy, disgusting day. And you know how you can tell? You can tell my hair is like, just keeps growing.
That's right. Yeah. Cody's got the frizzy hair.
Got big frizzy hair for all the people listening at home to the podcast. Just imagine it.
The dew point is way too high. Welcome to Not in My Backyard. This is the show where we talk about all the things causing drama on neighborhood Facebook groups and Brian Lehrer callers and Gothamist commenters all over this city.
Yes, my name is Cody Lindquist.
I'm Charlie Todd.
We are a married couple. We like to get that out of the way. Marriage is cool, guys. You should do it. We met at this theater 20 years ago.
About 20 years ago.
Which is weird, right? Because we are 25.
We were
children.
I am a comedian here at UCB, but I'm also a member of Community Board 4's Transportation Planning Committee. But my opinions here tonight are not necessarily reflective of those of the full board or my committee.
That's true. And I am also a comedian and actress, and I am an elected representative of the Community Education Council for District 2 in Manhattan. But my opinions tonight do not represent the opinions of the CEC District 2. So
We do the show every month, and we also release it as a podcast, which you should subscribe to for when you can't be here in person. We got a really great group of panelists. We're going to talk about everything that's in the news in New York right now. But at the top of the show, we always like to pop quiz our audience, and because we have a very smart audience.
Smartest in New York City, if you ask me.
Very civically minded audience. So I'm going to ask a few pop quiz questions, and you can raise your hand or you can shout out the answer, and then we're going to do a challenge that has a prize. Okay. First pop quiz question. New York City has more billionaires than any other city in the world. How many billionaires do we have? Price is Right rules.
At least two, you and me.
Yeah, right. Okay, how many billionaires in New York City? 50?
50.
What was that? 66?
Very, very specific number. I like it.
Okay. 80?
80.
12? I'm going to give it to 66, but it's not that close. The correct answer is 123.
Guys, eat the rich. Am I kidding? 123?
Okay. Follow-up question.
That's insane.
How many millionaires are there in New York City? Millionaires. How many millionaires? Shout out a number.
Look, there's no...
600?
600.
10,000? 1,000?
I heard 20,000.
2 million? 2 million, that would be a lot in a city of 8 million.
There's 8 million people in New York and 2 million of them are millionaires. That's it seems.
What was
right
the highest guess under 2 million? 300,000? That's a great guess. It's 384,500 millionaires. Roughly one in every 22 residents.
Yeah, but $1 million will only buy you one studio apartment in New York City, so your money doesn't go that far.
Last number-based question. How many pizza places does New York City have? Pizza places. 5 million. Good guess. I like that. 5,000?
Pretty good.
600. What was that? 30,000? 10,000? 800. I'm going to give it to 800. The correct answer, 1,900. 1,900 pizza places.
That's actually less than I would think.
That's a hard question. I mean, it is like almost every block. It's like how many blocks are there?
Yeah, that's true. Feels like a lot.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to do a head-to-head quiz that does have a prize. Two people are going to get on stage, and they're going to compete to see who can name the most of something. And the category is New York City geography. New York City geography. So, if you know any, you should be able to.
It's
get
a really low bar, guys. It's fine.
Yeah.
You don't.
So
no one here is going to make fun of you. We're going to be supportive.
You got to volunteer yourself.
Yeah, you have to volunteer yourself. Come on. There's a prize.
Okay, all right,
come on up.
A reluctant
we see
volunteer
this,
here.
We see this.
We appreciate it. Give
you
give
can't
it up.
Make this gentleman do it by himself. What's your name?
Francois,
come on. We cannot let Francois do it by himself.
Somebody with the real thick New York accent has got to be
there. You go,
Francois. Okay. All right. And sir, what is your name?
I'm Anthony.
Anthony. Okay. Anthony versus Francois. Okay. Here is the question. How many East River bridges can you name? So these are bridges that go over the East River. So think a second about the East River. And where it starts and where
it ends. And we'll go back and forth. So Francois, yeah, you'll go first and you'll name one, and then Anthony will name one, and we'll keep going until one of you gets out. So let's start
just
with...
Just say one.
With you.
Oh,
just
one. Brooklyn Bridge.
Brooklyn Bridge
Brooklyn
is
Bridge.
Correct.
Yeah.
Manhattan.
Manhattan Bridge is correct.
Williamsburg.
That's correct.
George Washington.
George Washington Bridge is incorrect. I'm sorry, Anthony.
Well, okay,
Francois,
well, for the
you
win,
are a
Francois.
Winner. Can you name more?
Queensborough Bridge.
Correct. Any more?
Willits Avenue Bridge.
Willits Avenue is incorrect, but you are still our winner.
Really?
I think that's probably Harlem River. Let's give it up for Francois and also Anthony.
Thank you very much.
Anyone in the audience want to shout out additional East River bridges? Triborough is correct. FDR is not a bridge. Verrazano Bridge is not East River technically. What was that? No, I think that's Harlem River. The ones that were missed were Roosevelt Island Bridge, the Bronx Whitestone Bridge, and the Throgs Neck Bridge, and the Hellgate Bridge. So East River starts like up by Rikers Island on the other side of LaGuardia and goes down. Okay.
Francois, get in touch with us on Instagram, and you get 2 free tickets to our show next month.
Yes.
Very coveted prize.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
So our Instagram is at NIMBY Show. Follow us on Instagram, which everyone in the audience should do, and send us a DM, Francois, and we will give you 2 tickets to our next show. Okay, are you guys ready to meet the panelists?
Woo!
She is a reporter for Gothamist and WNYC. Please welcome Hannah Frischberg.
He is one half of the hilarious political comedy duo, The Good Liars, and a regular guest on MS Now. Please welcome Jason Selvig.
And he is a comedian and the co-creator of the Power Joker show at Caveat. Please give it up for Evan Ford Barden.
How many of those East River bridges have you guys been on?
I think a fair number, but I was stumped too.
Yeah,
I think
the
it was
the
you got the
neck
Power
and the
3.
I think
tough.
All of them.
Yeah,
I think I've been on all of them.
You don't think that the Throgs Neck and the Whitestone are East River, but it is. It is. I learned that when I wrote the question. all right. Unfortunately, guys, we have to start our show with an Eric Adams update. Do you guys remember our last mayor, Eric Adams?
Raise your hand if you remember Eric Adams. Anyone? Okay.
Wow.
So we've already got the image up here. Unfortunately, we have to talk about this. This month, he showed up to a small town meeting in Wisconsin to lobby for a data center company, only to be mercilessly booed by the crowd. Then he tweeted a shirtless photo of himself, provocatively holding a cucumber. This is not, if this looks like Photoshop or AI, it is not.
That's a big cucumber.
The tweet, he said, "My secret weapon, veggies. Cucumber emoji, green pepper emoji. This photo isn't about showing off. Okay, maybe a little bit of that too. It's about showing what's possible when you take control of your health." Question, can anybody predict what this man will do next after his data center and thirst trap month of August?
Mayor of Albania.
Mayor of Albania. That would be a good one. He is recently an Albanian citizen.
I assume if he's not already, he's going to be shilling for AI companies specifically.
Andrew Cuomo is shilling for crypto companies right now. It seems to be like our disgraced politicians go into all the best industries.
I mean, I have to say, no one said it yet, but he does look pretty fucking good. Those
veggies
are working.
In defense of the former mayor, like, let's not hate. This is a thirst trap. Like, I don't know.
He's trying to be as hot as Mamdani, and it's not working. Mamdani is the
Mamdani done a shirtless pic? Has he done him?
We're
he
all
jumped in the water in a full suit.
What's
he hiding?
I think he knows it'd be too much for us to handle if he starts walking around shirtless.
All right, Seamus, let's get photo number 2 of Eric Adams up, please. My friend Andrew took this photo a few weeks ago.
Let's see if we can get it up.
Yeah, of Eric Adams on a blue city bike, biking the wrong way on 34th Street without a helmet, which is, I don't want a helmet shame, we'll talk about that later. But most alarmingly, he had some sort of laptop or tablet sitting in the basket without a case, which is what that zoomed in photo is there on the right. Is this a win for the War on Cars movement that even Eric Adams knows that a Blue City bike is the fastest, most efficient way to get around our city?
I mean, it's definitely the easiest way to break your laptop. I mean, that is such a risk to, and unnecessary maybe, but it's better than taking an Uber. I mean, look, I'm starting to like Eric Adams a little bit more than when he was mayor right now. I don't know what this says about me.
Maybe it's just a shirt.
He's sexy. He holds vegetables. I don't know.
He chooses chaos.
I think it's a huge win. I mean, like, this precious cargo compared to when I see people with, like, their girlfriend in the front of it or their child in the front of it.
That is...
Wait, child? Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I saw... There was something posted a couple weeks ago just about, like, I think a guy had 3 kids on a city bike.
Uh-huh.
An electric, but, you know.
I try, as a parent myself, I try not to judge, but, oh, boy, do I judge when I see, like, a 3-year-old just sitting on the seat, just holding on in the little basket thing. I'm like, oh,
are they
man.
Wearing a helmet?
No. Okay. You think they're throwing them on a city bike and being like, well, here's a helmet.
Safety first. Yeah.
But if City Bike, if Lyft developed a cargo bike product, it would be extremely popular. Huge. There's so many times I'm like, I want to be able to get my kid from point A to point B. Our kids are a little older now, but when they were little, like, I had my own bike and I had my own cargo bike. Most people don't have their own e-cargo bike or place to store one. But yeah, to be able to get from point A to point B quickly with your kid, like, it would be a very popular product. But
what if we turned our kid into a laptop? Then we could just throw them in the basket. It would be totally fine.
But there have been multiple pictures on social media of Eric Adams on a city bike, always a Blue City bike. He's not paying for the expensive white city bike. He's using his own body, his very good body, to power this blue bike around town. I've got to say, I'm impressed. I think it's a huge win for someone that stopped a lot of bike lane projects over his 8 years. The fact that he's out here and our bike laneless streets, biking the wrong way. Good for him.
Good for him biking the wrong way.
No, I mean, because there should be a two-way bike lane so you can go the wrong way.
Yeah, gotta get on that. We do want to talk a little bit about Mom Donnie's new bike helmet. Last week, Mom Donnie posted a video on social media where he responded to the countless online comments he's received in the past, saying he would be wearing a helmet when he's biking. The mayor said, "You're right, I've got to do better." And then the video showed him unboxing and putting on a new helmet. People in the comments were praising Mom Donnie and listening to him and admitting to do better, that he wants to do better. Something rarely seen from politicians. But shouldn't Mom Donnie's energy be towards creating streets that are safe, as cities like Amsterdam and Copenhagen do, where no one wears a helmet because there's no reason to? What do you guys think?
I'm going to say something here. You have to wear a helmet. You have to wear a helmet. And this is not funny, what I'm about to say. I'm going to say something very, like, sad. I was in a cab one time years ago. And we were driving, and we felt like a bump, like a boom.
Ooh.
And we were like, what was that? And then the cab driver was then like, oh, my God, oh, my God. We'd run over a woman on a bike.
Oh,
and she
gosh.
Was not wearing a helmet. And I'm just going to say, after what I saw, wear a helmet. I think she survived, but it was not good.
Well, what we're saying is, though, and if there's a way for cabs to hit people on bikes, shouldn't we make it so that the street design is such that they're not intermingling?
Because that's what they do in
Amsterdam, Copenhagen, and these other really bike-friendly cities. There's such a mass amount of people biking, and that is so separate from, you rarely see people in those places wearing helmets because they're the majority. The bikers are the majority. That's not like, you know, if you take away the predator.
Could still fall over.
Well, I
wear a helmet. I'm not saying I don't wear a helmet.
I think that is exactly the point, Jason. I think good for Mom Donnie. The thing that's nice about the Mom Donnie video, he's like, people have been asking me to do this, so I listened and I'm going to change my mind.
A politician who listens?
Right.
What?
And that's why everybody looks at that video. He's like, this guy's great. Somebody asked him to repair a water fountain in a park and he does it. Everybody's complaining he's not wearing a helmet and he does it. So I think that's great. But a bike helmet is for when you accidentally fall, right? When you trip and you fall off your bike or you hit a pothole, that can happen to anybody. So it is smart to wear a bike helmet. It's not always convenient to wear a bike helmet, especially if you're city biking or if you know, it was raining when you came to the theater tonight, but you might want to bike home and you didn't bring a helmet. So I think not having helmet laws or forcing people or shaming people to wear helmets will increase more cyclists and their safety in numbers. But if you get run over by a cab, it doesn't matter if you have a helmet on, right? A helmet is not to save your life if you get hit by a Cadillac Escalade. That's just not going to do it.
So I was wrong when I was saying you don't have to wear a helmet. you get run over by a cab, it's fine. My story had no meaning.
I think it's smart to wear a helmet in case you
Charlie wears a helmet. You wear a helmet.
I wear a helmet when I'm on a long bike ride. You if I'm do. Going over you a bridge, if I'm with my kids.
Don't act like you're anti-helmet. You wear a helmet.
I think it's a messaging thing, you know, which is, I agree. Like, it's great that the mayor was, you know, acquiesced to this request and is sort of like modeling for, let's just say, like young kids who are maybe like
all children need to wear a helmet,
like, starting to ride a bike for the first time, or people that are hesitant to try to ride a bike. It makes them feel safer. Maybe gets them on a bike, for example. But it would have been nice, I guess, if he had kind of led with that message of like, yeah, maybe we have to do this right now because our streets are not quite safe enough. But the goal is to get to a point where we don't have to wear helmets, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it would be nice to not be able to have it so you couldn't get run over by a car. Wouldn't that be nice? That would be the ultimate goal.
Disagree.
Hard disagree. I do want to take a sharp left and talk about Froyo. So people are spending a ridiculous amount of money waiting in line for frozen yogurt chains like Mika all over the city. Can someone explain to me what is going on? Because isn't this just Pinkberry? Has anyone had it?
The people love a line. They see a line. Sometimes I don't even think they know what's at the end of the line. They just get in the line.
Yes. Yeah. It is crazy though. Has anyone had the Greek yogurt, the viral Greek yogurt?
No.
I haven't either because of the line. I don't want to wait in the line.
Anybody go to Mika? Yeah. Is it great? It's delicious.
Is it better than, markedly better than Pinkberry and...
Okay, so for the podcast listener, the audience member said that the Mika and these viral places are clean food and not just the candy for Pinkberry. I will say about Pinkberry is that Pinkberry, like 2 weeks ago, they had free yogurt for like 4 hours in the afternoon. And I went because I love a free thing. But it was just funny to me that Pinkberry was like, hey, remember us? We also have this. And there was a little line in front of the Pinkberry because it was free. There was like 10 people. Yeah. I had to wait like 5 minutes. But I feel bad for Pinkberry. Because, like, you can get, I don't really know what clean food is, to be honest, but you can get, like, fruit and stuff in Pinkberry. You don't have to get
Fruity I think
Pebbles.
The fruit there is covered in sugar.
The fruit is covered in sugar?
Yeah, Pinkberry. It's like syrupy fruit. It's not like fresh fruit that they just chop up. Is anyone here old enough to remember Tasty Delight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tasty Delight and 16 Handles.
Yeah. Tasty Delight was, I think, the opposite of clean, and it was literally just a ball of chemicals. It was like this.
It was so good. It was so good.
It was this. I had friends that just literally lived off of Tasty Delight and alcohol. They're doing great now.
Was but, it no calorie?
It was the thrill of it was that you could eat as much as you want because it was just
But you could
ice.
Put like Oreos on it too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, but yeah, people yeah. would just get it. It was like, oh, it's great. And it tasted like nothing. Like just a spray of chemicals in your mouth.
I'd like to take this moment for no reason to plug Rice to Riches, which is probably the most unhinged pudding shop maybe in the country. If you want offensive signage while you eat pudding, boy, you should go here.
Wait, can you describe the signage?
Yeah, what's offensive?
It's like Wine Mom, Live, Laugh, Love signage, but it's like all been quite canceled. It's like bad fat jokes, but it's just like displayed with such confidence that you're like halfway through your vat of pudding before you're like, wait, what is hanging on the walls?
A vestige from the past when women hated themselves and were out loud about it.
One more food topic. I want to talk about salads briefly. Another chain that's been desperate to get people to come back to it is Poor Just Salad in the Cyclosporiaris. I don't know how to say it.
Cyclospora.
During the outbreak, Just Salad has been, Cody and I go to Just Salad about once a week. We're fans. And they've been texting me like, please come. We have smoothies too. 50% off smoothies every day. Please come back.
We'll boil your salad for you. Just come back.
Yeah. Have you guys been avoiding near the Sweet Greens and the Just Salads?
I will say I have specifically been to a Sweet Green in the last like 2 weeks, not even thinking about the outbreak, just purely thinking I was looking for a place to eat lunch in the middle of Manhattan. And I was like, oh, I haven't been to Sweet Green for 2 years. This is the perfect time to go. And
what could possibly go wrong?
I will be totally honest. I like peeked in because it was like during the 12 to 1 lunch hour. And I was like, it's going to be crazy. I'm not going to go there. And I was like, oh, there's like no line. Let me go.
I feel bad for them because it's like iceberg lettuce in Michigan at Taco Bell. And we're all just like avoiding everything.
No, we had a bad outbreak here. And a lot of people said they got it from the salad places.
Okay. I had I think it was May. I was getting like those pre-made salads from the store, like the bagged salads.
Yeah.
And I got food poisoning from, I don't know what it was, but it was like a 3-day thing.
It could have been cyclosporine.
From all angles.
It
might have
started
been.
In like May and June.
Yeah.
And it went nuts.
It was like one of those like cheddar. I mean, it's probably terrible. Whatever it is, it's probably like 800 calories, but it was really good. But now I can't have it. I can't have it anymore. I love sweet greens. I love sweet greens. It used to be like part of my daily ritual.
It's just
almost.
Another shitty, like this summer, we can't go outside and breathe the air because the air quality, and we can't even eat healthy food, even with Eric Adams demanding that we do, because we're going to have to shit. All right, I want to talk one more restaurant topic. A couple of months ago, we talked about an article that Tim Donnelly, friend of the show, wrote for the New York Groove about how NYC diners are using AI to create Instagram posts of food. This trend has only gotten worse, and now it seems like every deli and pizza place has AI images of their food on giant posters in the window. The food looks not only bad, but literally scary. This weekend, I went to a renowned pizza place in Astoria called Andrew Bellucci's Pizza. This is a top 25 pizza place, according to the New York Times. Seamus, if we could get photo number 3 up. This was their pizza image on the A-frame in front of the store. This is world, the pizza was great. It was like definitely a solid 9 out of 10 pizza. This to me looks very freaky. I personally don't like things with lots of eyes on them. A lot of people have that. Anybody in the audience does, like, you know, certain plants that have like lots of holes.
Charlie cannot do. I had a towel once that had some sort of pattern on it. He's like, you got to get rid of that.
Phobia,
you got to
right?
get rid
There's
of that towel.
For it, yeah, I wouldn't say I have the phobia, but I would prefer not to see certain things that have tons of holes in them.
For those listening at home, it looks like a bunch of pimples.
Yeah, it's like pimple
on
pizza.
A pizza.
It's like a hairdryer, but pizza.
Yeah, and yeah. If you've been to like Lindustrie Pizza or any of the like nice trendy pizza place, it was that kind of pizza. It was great pizza. Okay, but they didn't want to take a picture of their own pizza, so they just put this on a sign. All right, now if we could see photo number 4. This is another AI thing that we came across. This is shrimp rings, apparently. I think this is deeply unsettling. not something that I want to look at.
I like the idea of it, though, to be honest.
Infinite shrimp?
Yeah, you know, no tails, you know? I think
yeah,
that's good. That's the
ring.
Hardest part of eating a shrimp is the tails. And
that's
there's
a good
more
point.
Shrimp.
They're thinking it's a future food, and they're
Let's
thinking this is how we should breed
to
them.
Good work and
I think
make this
is shrimp scampi. I think that's what it was.
I understand that it's a shortcut, like you don't want to hire a photographer and have a professional photo shoot, but can't, like, iPhones are pretty nice. Like, can't you just like take pictures of your food?
But also, I mean, I already used to have an issue maybe years ago, but like with stock photography being
right.
used.
That
like,
was what
you,
it used
you go to,
be. To
the diner, they have stock photos that look way better than the actual crappy food they're serving or whatever. And that made me mad. And then this is just like beyond the pale to an extent, because like you could just buy stock photos.
Right. Just buy a photo
you don't even
of
have to
a
buy them. You could like I rip them off the internet.
And know? Also don't like the whole point of AI, of generative AI, is that you can go, no, that shrimp looks like a donut with
a
poppy seeds
nature,
on it.
Yeah.
Please make me a shrimp. And then they're supposed to like fix it and fix it.
Yeah,
and it's just like somebody was like, first pass, fine.
Yeah.
It's good.
They gotta get better prompt engineers on the menu teams here.
Hot take, I support this. This is so unhinged. It's like beyond capitalism. Like they are completely self-defeating with their own branding. It's basically art. Also, like bodega facade wallpaper has never exactly been like artistically inspired, but this kind of is.
Yeah, the bodegas will be like, good food, like that's great for you. And it's like a picture of a mozzarella sticks and like a greasy cheeseburger. I kind of like this more. I heart agree.
All right, I'm going to show one more picture. And I am going to recommend, take it off. Go back, Seamus, go back.
I can see it.
All right.
That's something else.
We'll talk about that in a minute. so this, you may have already seen it. I recommend that you do not look at this burrito. If you've already seen it, I'm sorry that you didn't get this trigger.
Our friend Damian Chadwick shared this one on his Instagram today,
yeah.
And
I saw it and thought it was relevant. Show the burrito. I don't know how well you guys can see it, but you can look on the TV monitor as well.
It's like spiders and holes.
It's so many holes.
It's like a honeycomb almost inside.
And it's supposed to be eggs, potato, sausage, cheddar cheese, and a flour tortilla. And it looks like a decaying flesh inside
it's only
of a...
$13.50.
That's it.
That's the good news. It's $13.50. All right, get it off.
We showed this to our children, and our one child went, "Please stop showing me these pictures." He was very upset. Yeah, it was very upsetting to him.
Yeah, and our older child also was still thinking about it 5 minutes. I saw him like shuddering 5 minutes later. He's like, "Are you thinking of the burrito I showed you?" He's like, "Yes, Dad, I am thinking of it."
I do think the younger generation, like the phrase "that's so AI" is like really prevalent with them now. They're like everything. They're really attuned to it. They're like, "That's so AI. That's so AI." They're really like grossed out, not just by the pictures of food, but just everything is AI generated, and they're really smart and savvy with it. So good for them. Maybe there's hope, I guess. The children will be okay. Maybe. We don't know.
But yeah, it's so backwards. Like the stock photography and the bodega showing the like better food than they actually have inside. Like I get that hustle. That's, it's annoying sometimes when you get your food and it doesn't live up to it. But to actively put something that's like nightmare fuel on a sign in front of your restaurant is beyond me.
It's beyond
me. But we're talking about it, aren't we?
We're all going to try that holy burrito.
All right, I want to switch gears a little bit, talk about a group of parents claims that the introduction of Mamdani's new 2K program is the perfect time to change the rules for the cutoff date for a child's age entering the public school system. New York City's December 31st cutoff is among the latest. It is the latest in the country. This means about a third of the students are only 4 when they start kindergarten. Parents whose kids are born in November and December say they feel like their kids are disadvantaged. Should the cutoff date move? So just so you all know that, how many people went to public school here in New York City? So New York City, we have a couple. New York City is one of the only places where you start kindergarten at 4 and you're 4 all the way up. They go by the whole year. So what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good time to change it?
Wait, so the kids are too young is the problem?
Yeah, so normally like in the suburbs, it's like a September cutoff. You have to be 5 by the beginning of school to start kindergarten. So the way it works is here, you can be 5, you turn 5 the next calendar year. So you'll start college at 17 and you'll be 17 all the way up until December 31st sometimes of your freshman year of college. And then plus there's all the red shirting, all the people in the suburbs are like, "My precious baby was born in April and I think they should be held back so they can be 30,000 pounds and be really good at football." That's exactly how they all sound and what they think about. But it's true. They continue to hold their kids back and back and back. So we are sending our kids to college at 17 sometimes. And in the suburbs, there are kids who are 19 starting college for the first time. So it's kind of a weird process. So what do you guys think?
I think I support it because I'm an October baby, and I was on the older end of my year for the entirety of school, and I was killing it.
Yeah.
And the younger kids weren't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they need some help.
Screw those younger kids.
But today, an October baby is young. So, like, December is the youngest.
When they move it. They must have moved it at some point.
Yeah, I don't know when they moved it.
Now in the last, like, 20 years.
Yeah, because you went to school here in the city.
Public school?
Yep.
Yeah, because, it's been like this for a long time. So, I don't know. But maybe, yeah. What do you think?
I did repeat kindergarten.
I don't think that makes any sense. It doesn't make sense. The dates don't match up. It doesn't make sense to me.
Why do you mean
17 going into college? Was anybody 17 going into college? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Some of our native New Yorkers, some of the same
5.
People.
Yeah.
The same people?
Some of them?
Yeah, some.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I think the problem is that you have to have the date somewhere, and the people that are on the young side of the date are going to complain. So if you move it to September, there's still going to be people that are like, "My child was born in August, and this is not right."
I think no matter what, you should stick to it. What I do like about the New York City system is they do not allow you to redshirt. You have to start kindergarten. If they want you to repeat kindergarten, you can, if you're on the younger side, but you have to start. They do not let you make the decision. Most other places are like, "It's a September cutoff, but, it's up to you." And then parents make their decision, and then all of a sudden there's a man with a beard in kindergarten, and you're like, "What?" They're like, "He turned 17 2 years ago. It's fine."
The place my brain keeps going is to pseudoscientist Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers, which I can't, as you're describing this, I can't like do the math of, I know that in some cases when they're talking about like sports, the younger you start, the better that is for you. So in my head, I'm like, okay, well, if I'm a 17-year-old in college, that's better, right?
Because I thought it was the opposite. I thought it was the older you start because then you're bigger.
Yeah. So well, I don't know, but because like, yeah, so I'm getting it confused. That's
we're
what
all sports
out.
People up here. Like, I'm super athletic.
No, but it's like if you start, if you start later, then you're bigger.
If you're Serena Williams and you start tennis at a really young age, you're good when you grow up. But maybe you're like not as good against other people if they're older than you and you're in second grade.
Well, I think wasn't the thing that you like thrive when like you start basketball
you're
and
good.
You're a little bit taller because you had a growth spurt.
I think you're right.
And then it was like they stick with it, and the other kids
just
like
right, yeah, they
because
get,
they're
like,
not
encouraged
good.
And they're
I
will say chosen for like the elite teams,
right?
And
exactly
things like that, right? So
we have a middle schooler, and middle school is fucking wild. You see children walk into that school, and you're like, they have a teddy bear, and they still call their mom mommy, and then there is full-grown human beings. Middle school is crazy. And when you exacerbate that and you have people holding their kids back, there's some eighth graders that I'm like, oh my word, this person is driving. I don't understand. But middle school in general is crazy, guys. I don't know if you remember. When we were all in it, we didn't realize how crazy it was, but from the outside, man.
Yeah, there's a lot
crazy
of like,
time.
Eighth graders that could dunk on me.
Yeah, for sure. Even now, now I look at them like, how are you so tall? I don't get it.
All right, I want to talk about a thing called Hoodwill in Brooklyn. The New York Times did a story about Hoodwill, a group of entrepreneurs who intercept people taking bags of stuff to Goodwill in downtown Brooklyn and ask if they can have a bag. They then sell the secondhand items on the street at prices much lower than Goodwill. Fans of Hoodwill respect the hustle and love the prices. Critics complain that they leave trash on the street and harass Goodwill donors. Should Hoodwill get shut down?
I think if they can avoid leaving trash on the street, I don't really have an issue with it. You know, that to me is like, that's a bad thing to do. But otherwise, yeah, the respect the hustle comment, I'm on board.
Has anybody ever seen Hoodwill or had an experience in front of a Goodwill or Salvation Army?
That Goodwill is crazy. That downtown Brooklyn one. That's the wildest. I like go there for like inspiration when I'm in like a fugue state and I just need to like be entertained by the world without like going beyond the downtown Brooklyn Goodwill. That I mean, I don't know if I would know where the Goodwill stops and the Hoodwill starts.
Apparently the street corner. I will say that the Salvation Army in Hell's Kitchen, like there are people that hang out near it. During the migrant crisis, we had a lot of asylum seekers in hotels in Hell's Kitchen, and they would all hang out in front of the Salvation Army, and it was kind of like I was bringing like kids' toys to the Salvation Army and to be like, oh, this kid wants them right now, and he's smiling. Like, there is something nice about being able to just like, I wasn't reselling it. Like,
how much money did you make?
There was a lot of people taking advantage of the situation, though. It started off in that way where it was really wonderful because people would come and you would give them things directly. And then there were people pushing and grabbing things that you knew weren't for them that they were trying to sell. And it got a little like bad. And then I would hand a bag to some people sometimes, see them open everything up, throw everything on the ground, and then take whatever thing that they thought they could resell. So that's kind of shitty. And they also, I've heard of this happening at food pantries too. We have a food pantry in our neighborhood that has been dealing with people coming in like as soon as it's the same three people that stand there and take all the food. It's just kind of, you know.
Private equity is going to buy this and like it's going to be a new business model.
Hedge fund backed community.
Exactly.
Fridge.
Yes, exactly.
BlackRock plus the fridge on the corner in Bed-Stuy. I can see it now.
We do know we could use some more billionaires in New York, so that makes sense.
All right. Speaking of billionaires, I want to do an update on the pied-à-terre tax. The Wall Street Journal published a story about the 1% freaking out over the pied-à-terre tax and trying to come up with ways to circumvent it, including having their children move out of their NYU dorm room and into the vacant apartment. Husbands and wives separating so that the husband can stay in Connecticut at that house and avoid New York taxes while the wife lives in the vacant apartment. To seriously considering a comedian's satirical website offering to match pied-à-terre owners with artists who would stay in their homes for free as a charity to the 1%. It seems like this tax is working out perfectly so far. If it's causing people to have to freak out like this, what do you guys think about the pied-à-terre tax?
Are you guys being affected?
Not affected. I think my favorite. I guess like kind of byproduct of it is it's also allowed, I think, the state and city to start looking at people that are avoiding registering their cars and paying insurance on their cars in New York because they're claiming to live somewhere else. So that's a nice little sort of like byproduct of it. That I
live in Virginia when I want to pay my car insurance rate, but I live in New York, so don't tax me.
Right, and so they're saying things like, "Hey, you can't. I live there. You can't. You know, apply this tax to me." And then they're asking, "Okay, well, can you switch your registration?" And it's like, "Well, I don't live. Which one is it?
I don't live there."
Yeah. So they have to pick. They have to pick, and I think that's important.
If I was an NYU student in a shitty dorm room and my parents had like $1 billion empty apartment, I would want to live there, a vacant apartment. So I'm happy for those kids that they're...
I'm so happy that those Nephilim...
Finally something good happened to them. Yeah.
Get to move out of their NYU dorm to their lovely pied-à-terre.
Also the idea of like artists, you know, occupying these spaces follows in a beautiful tradition of artists moving to New York who have someone else pay for their housing back home.
Yeah. That's true.
So it's like totally fine.
Yeah, what's that tall building that really, I mean, I think they're all ugly, but the white one that has all the problems, it's like a square.
Park Avenue.
Yeah. If that's like turns into an artist loft or something, that would be awesome. Because it's already like swaying in the wind.
You know, there's
right now
some precedent for that. The Two Towers, Manhattan Plaza Towers were built as luxury housing in the 70s in Hell's Kitchen. And do you think anybody wanted to live in the 70s in Hell's Kitchen in a luxury? So they couldn't actually sell any of it, so they turned it over to the city, and they made it artist housing, and it transformed the neighborhood. So let's get on it. Let's do some more innovative things like that. Can we get photo number 6 up, please? A married couple in their early 30s sleeps in queen bunk beds in their West Village studio apartment. The ground level apartment features a backyard. The couple is very happy with the arrangement as they have differing work schedules and don't want to wake each other up. The wife, Casey, told Curbed, "Sleep is so important, and we also just sleep so differently that we don't get comfortable sleep when we're together." Is this a great space-saving hack for a New York studio apartment, or are they about to get divorced?
I think it's a great idea. I think people should embrace this. You could have your roommate sleep above you if you wanted. I mean, bunk beds, there's no space in New York City. We were talking about this backstage. Studio apartment in like Fort Greene, Clinton Hill. Like if you wanted to buy it, it's $1 million. It's $1 million. And this, you've got more space. You could loft it. You can do whatever you want. But I think this is beautiful. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah. What do you think, Hannah?
Full support. Also, I think this show is teaching me that more than nuanced policy or life views, I just choose chaos every time. I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. Do it. Put the laptop
put
in the front of the
seat. Put some shrimp rings on
put
them.
Put some shrooms on your bodega. Sleep on top of your husband. I love it.
I don't like this. It's very creepy. It just looks, who gets the top bunk? You know, which one do you use for not sleeping? You know what I mean?
I think it's overly decadent. That's my take, right? Like, two queens? Who the fuck do you think you are? Like,
you could get away with a double.
Yeah, like some people don't even have a queen in their New York City bedroom, and you have two stacked on top of each other. At least, like, my grandparents were humble enough to have two single beds side by side, you know, to preserve the marriage. And, you know, I think it's just, this is sort of excessive.
I think that's fair. Two full beds is enough space. And you would regain more space, floor space in the apartment if you did that.
It's like the natural progression of the Protestant suite. Like I Love Lucy or something. They're just like stacked and bigger as we approach late-stage capitalism. Yeah.
Did people really do that? Did people really sleep in separate beds? Or no, was that,
that
like...
Was that was manufactured by like the... I mean, I'm sure that happens, but like they couldn't show people in bed together on television. So they
were an interracial couple and they couldn't show them in bed together. But that's why I thought they were separate.
My grandmother and grandfather, legitimately, that was how their bedroom was forever. And even after, I actually, like my grandfather passed when I was very young. My grandmother kept that set up the whole time, the whole rest of her life.
Interesting.
She slept in like a single bed or a twin bed, maybe.
Wow. She could have upgraded to a bunk.
She could have upgraded to a bunk.
I will say our family took a trip to Ireland this spring and Europeans don't understand the concept of having two queen beds in a hotel room.
They don't.
It's really great.
Twin. It's twin.
Yeah. It's like they have tiny beds in their hotels.
I was like,
even
do they
smaller.
Have families? I don't understand. If you book a family room, it's some weird configuration of like cots stacked on top of each other.
We had one room in Galway that was four single beds, like four twin beds for our family of four. I got to say it was great. Everybody had a bed. My kids weren't kicking me in the middle of the night. You know, it was pretty great. So I don't know, extra beds.
Come to our apartment and it's just one room with a bunch of single beds. Like, wow, that's so functional and cool. And they're all not right. Weird at all.
You got to stack them. You got to stack them.
Speaking of real estate costs, the New York Times profiled a particularly interesting real estate listing. A prime Park Slope location in a pre-war building close to public transportation and great restaurants for just $250,000 plus common charges of $400 a month. Anybody want to guess what the catch is? The listing is for a parking spot. $250,000 plus $400 a month common charges for a parking spot. Meanwhile, we are giving these away for free on the street. So is the cost of free parking too high? Evan, I know you have opinions on how we give away free street parking.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane, right? Like the degree to which we give away this, the most valuable resource in New York potentially for people to store their private vehicles is, I don't know. Like, I think if you were to, I mean, I don't know. I feel people are trying to figure out how to make the appeal. I was gonna say, but if you tried to frame it of like, this is how much it would cost to buy that place, it seems like that would convince people that this is crazy, but you know, we've tried that and so far, it hasn't moved the needle at all.
It shocked me that it was $250,000. Actually, yeah. That part didn't shock me. I've seen like real estate listings for like $3 million apartments and an extra $400,000.
So can you explain, what does it look like? Is it a garage? Is it actually a spot?
You're like, can we bring a double bunk bed and sleep in?
It's called like a car condo is what I think the listing calls it. It's a building. It's a garage.
It's a garage. Oh,
it's just a garage.
But could you live in the garage?
I mean, you would think if you spend $250,000 a month and pay $400 a month in maintenance that you should be able to live there.
You can live in your car.
Yeah. I mean, there's a guy who parks a camper on our block in Hell's Kitchen and seems to be living in it.
He usually lives there like a couple months out of the summer. I think he just summers there. Yeah. It's nice. It's really nice. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, but the thing that surprised me about it was like, well, I know parking spaces cost a lot, and they should, and it's crazy that we give them away for free, but the $400 a month common charge is just like...
But you have to, you pay $250, you have to pay for the parking attendant, you have to pay for the taxes and all the upkeep for the building.
I mean, it's like having a co-op, right? You know, sometimes when I'm cruising Zillow, and you're just like checking out listings, a lot of the cheapest prices you'll see for real estate are in like the Upper East Side, Upper West Side, and it's because the monthly fees are insane. The monthly fees are like $7,000, $10,000, but the actual buying price is significantly lower, Manhattan affordable. And so they gotta just pay in like anybody
else. But
why
wouldn't they just pay for the garage? Like a garage, you know, like even if it's $600 a month, you don't own the space, but then you...
You just said it, you don't own the space.
Yeah, I guess
you put that on your Instagram stories.
Yeah. You can't like pop a tent in there and hang out. All right. I want to move on to, according to an investigation by City and State, 52 of Zohram Mamdani's appointees travel in rarefied climate-controlled air thanks to the full-time car and driver assigned to them. According to a list provided by the city in response to a Freedom of Information request, excuses given by the current and former officials with chauffeurs range from it's a safety issue to you can't get work done on the subway without cell service to you can't see the problems from the city from the subway. You need to be on wheels to see the different neighborhood issues. Critics argue that these people serving the city are living in a bubble. What does the panel think? Hannah, do you have any thoughts?
A moving bubble.
The subways have no problems. I mean, it's funny to say like you don't see the problems of the city without when you're on the subway. It's like, well, that's just a different set of problems that I think people in cars are not seeing, you know.
I mean, we talked about Mamdani and his bike helmet earlier, but I think it's just so incredible that he rides a bike like all the time. There's all these, you see videos on social media all the time of someone freaking out because Mamdani biked by them with like three people behind him, his detail or whatever. And for me, like when I started cycling in the city, like that's when I felt like I really understood the city and it opened up to me. And the subway is like a Star Trek transporter where it's like, I'm in Midtown, and you know, now I'm in Greenpoint and I saw nothing in between. And being on a bike, you get to see everything in between. Being on a car, you could argue that. Although I also loved Mamdani when he was running, he often talked about the bubble of people in cars and how when you're being chauffeured around everywhere, you have a windshield perspective, and the only New Yorker you see is yourself in the reflection of the windshield. And I was like, that gave me chills when I heard that for the first time. It's like, it's so right. But yeah, these quotes are from some Adams people, some Mamdani people who claim that for their job, they're the exception. They need to be chauffeured.
But there are certain jobs that require cars. You know, someone's coming in to fix your dryer. They have a boatload of tools that they need to bring in. You know, contractors need vehicles. Like, there are certain things that, yes, you do need a car. We can't get around it. But ideally, you should make it so that those are some of the only cars on the road, and they can get to where they need to get faster. So, you know, if people are taking up space because they, I don't know, who can work in the back of a car? Don't you get nauseous?
Also, they could just be, like, expensing Ubers. They don't need, like, an assigned driver and a Cadillac Escalade, which it sounds like is what the situation is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also, I'm sure it's really hard when something was implemented by another administration to come in and be like, no, I'm good. I don't need the black car that takes me everywhere I want to go, and I can keep my, has my cold water in there and keeps all my bags and things. Like, it's hard to say no to that. I get it.
Golden Omni card.
Yes. It gets you to the front of the line. You don't have to wait. Yeah, that's a great idea.
I want to talk about another form of transportation, the pedicab. There is a new bill in the council to regulate the pedicab industry. Many pedicab operators are operating illegally with forged credentials, according to a new report that shaped the legislation. The report says passengers, mostly tourists, have been charged $500 to nearly $1,000 for rides lasting 15 to 20 minutes. Question, is there ever a situation where a pedicab is the best choice for transportation? Even if it was cheap, is there a situation where you can find yourself thinking, like, I need a pedicab fast?
Action movie chase? Maybe. It's the music. They're playing music while it's happening. It's always loud. 'Cause I'm happy. Or like some song, like, as loud as possible.
Yeah, a scenario where you have, like, someone with you who cannot get to a place quickly because otherwise a surprise will be ruined, so you have to put them in a pedicab because it'll be the slowest form of transportation to get there. Like, you need it to take 30 minutes to go 5 blocks. That's the scenario.
If you're really depressed and the only cure for your depression is hearing New York blasted while someone bikes you down Fifth Avenue. It's basically Wellbutrin.
Maybe if you're bleeding out, you know, and you can't get on a bike yourself and it's gridlock traffic.
I want to pay one last $1,000 before I die.
You, like, pull up into the ER at Bellevue in a pedicab.
It's probably cheaper than an ambulance. That's a good point.
Yeah, I think this seems like some, you know, yeah, that seems like a good thing. Hopefully that won't happen. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Okay, I want to talk about the trend of sewer exploration. So we can get photo number 7 up, Seamus. A trio of headlamp-wearing individuals was filmed popping out of a manhole near Penn Station in the middle of the night earlier this week. This behavior has been observed all over the city in recent months. Is this just urban explorers? And I feel like you run with a lot of, like, urban explorer types. The city claims that it's people scavenging for valuables. But should we be worried, or is this just something that's always happened that we're now learning about because of cameras?
I think it's relatively recent, and I think it's just kids. But every time this makes the news, I get like 20 texts from people who are like, oh, who is this? Is this you? Do you know these kids? You must know these kids. And I'm like, I don't know them.
Have you been in the sewers?
Yeah, but I didn't get caught.
What is it like? What's it like? I'm just thinking Ninja Turtles, you know, like the Foot Clan.
Did you see any Ninja Turtles? We must know.
They're all down there.
Really?
They're down there right now.
Rat
They're
King,
waiting for you.
Casey Jones, everybody. Okay.
they want to meet you.
Well, are there valuables down there?
No. Well, I mean, like, you could, like, probably rip copper out of the wall if you dig deep enough.
I will
say. But you
got to
dig really deep.
If anybody wants to go into a sewer on 72nd and Columbus, I did have every New Yorker's nightmare, and I dropped my AirPod down into the sewer. So there is something valuable in the sewer at 72nd and Columbus. One single AirPod. And it's still showing up on my phone as of yesterday. I went, this was actually a wonderful New York experience. I brought my children up because I was like, they're tiny. They can, you know, get in between there, right? Makes sense. I'm not above it. That's why I had them. So I brought them and I had looked up online, like I got a tape measure, like, and then I put a little magnet on the end and it was really deep down in there. And I saw it and I was like, I think I'm going to be able to get this because they're magnetic. It didn't work out. But the amount of people that stopped and helped, it was so wonderful and made me just really love the city so much. There was this man there with, he was a contractor and he started like gorilla taping all of these pipes together and he had a really strong magnet. And by then I had already accidentally knocked it even further into the water and it was a lost cause and I felt bad, but just so nice. Everyone was so helpful. I think people are really curious about what's down there. A lot of AirPods. That's what I think.
I think you should change the story. I think you should lie. Next time you tell it, just say you got the AirPod and this is it.
That is such a good point. Because everyone was like, I could see everyone's
like,
this is
going to
end well. And no, it didn't. But it did revive my faith in humanity. So
we've had multiple flash floods since she lost the AirPod. So they're definitely.
Yeah. But it still was showing up on my Find My. It was crazy. I just kept walking by being like, there it is. No. Has that happened to anyone? Has anyone dropped an AirPod down the... Wow, I'm the only one?
I haven't dropped anything in the sewer, but in my first year in New York, I dropped something onto the train tracks.
Yeah, did you get it back?
And I just hopped down and
got it and
hopped back up.
You're not supposed to do that.
I guess not.
Were you drunk?
No, I don't think so.
What was it?
It was the path. I don't know if this makes a difference.
Okay.
The tracks are much cleaner, and the trains are less frequent.
Was this a phone or a wallet?
It was like a glove.
A glove?
A glove? You risked your life for a glove?
I felt pretty good about it.
Don't do that at home.
All right. I want to talk about a story from London that caught our eye through the lens of what it might be like here in New York. So the Westminster Council, which oversees a large part of central London, has set out its intention to cut down on what it describes as vertical drinking. That is enjoying an alcoholic drink while standing up. It proposes to discourage excessive drunkenness and encourage the provision of more seating and premises that serve alcohol for people to sit and enjoy a drink and order food by table service in place of open bar space that caters to high volume vertical drinking. Amid mass public outcry, it's unlikely that any efforts to curb vertical drinking will pass. Question for the panelists, what is your preferred method of drinking during a night out at the bar, vertical or horizontal?
I really thought it was going to be like drinking through a different hole in your body.
I thought it was going to be like up. Stacks of drinks, like a sort of beer tower kind of situation.
Well, you have a drink at the top of the queen bed. Your wife is drinking at the bottom of the queen bed. That'd be vertical drinking.
Yeah, we call sitting down drinking horizontal?
Well, I am. If they could call standing drinking vertical drinking.
I think I prefer horizontal, I guess. I don't know. Is that boring?
No.
No, we support
you.
Thank you.
I like to drink and walk. That's one thing that I really like to do. I like to have when I'm in a city that allows it, unlike this place, I like to have a beer and walk around, look at things.
Yeah. You just can't get caught. That's the thing.
Well, in America, because we're archaic.
Well, it's like in, I don't know if they still do it, but Turkey's Nest in Williamsburg used to be like you get the styrofoam cup, and maybe it still is.
You can still do it.
They legalized the styrofoam cups.
We got caught one night by the cops, and they were looking to give out tickets.
And even with the styrofoam cup, they were like, what?
They know the drill. They saw you leave the place.
So
they saw you walk into the park.
Owned by a cop, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
So sort
could
of
tell I was not a cop as well.
I have to say I'm a big fan of vertical drinking. And if I'm having a night out at a bar, I prefer to be able to, you know, be a butterfly and socialize. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the situation. If I'm going to a bar with four friends and we're going to sit at a table, then yeah, I'd rather be at a table. But if I'm at a bar and it's like McManus Bar at the old UCB where there's going to be 20 acquaintances of mine here. I want to get to talk to like 15 of those acquaintances. There's a few I might want to avoid. But the worst is like you're sitting at a table and you're stuck like, you know, you go out with a big group and you're at a long table. That's
or you're
just
in the booth. You're in a booth and you're the middle of the booth and you can't get out of the booth.
And you see the people you'd rather talk to at the other side of the bar. I like the flexibility, so I'm pro vertical drinking for that reason.
Here's a question because... As you were describing that, until it got to like the food part, I thought that maybe the bill was against vertical drinking or it was like encouraging vertical drinking essentially, because if you're standing, you feel drunk faster. That's where my mind went. And if you're sitting down, you could just like pound them and have like no real
It is, you know, true. When you're standing up, you can get dizzy.
Right. So my question is like, yeah, if you're standing and drinking, do you feel like you have fewer drinks? Or does it not?
I think we need
difference?
Some more scientific research on vertical drinking before we make any laws about it. I think I'm
I don't want to hear that phrase ever again after tonight.
I agree.
The UK is also doing something interesting in pubs. UK pub rules. A major chain of pubs in the UK has banned the wearing of Meta glasses. The owner says the general code that applies to our pubs and most pubs is you can't film customers or employees without their permission. Meta glasses seem to breach this code and common sense by enabling surreptitious surveillance. Should NYC bars and restaurants ban Meta glasses?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so fucking creepy, right?
I don't think I've ever noticed anyone wearing them. Are they obvious, or have I just surrounded myself with good people?
Lee Goldberg wears them. ABC 7, weatherman.
You've seen him, like, on the air he wears them?
On the air he wears them.
Well, maybe he's getting information through them?
Do you get information from him? Is anyone here wearing... Are there any
Anybody
fucking narcs in here right now?
Got one.
You wearing them right now?
Not right now.
But he's cool. He's
obvious?
Cool. He could stay.
Do people notice when you're wearing them? No, that's what's so creepy about it.
They're somewhat conspicuous when they're recording, right? Because there's a light.
Yeah.
But then I've literally seen like a fixer on TikTok who's like a guy who's like, you come and give me your glasses and I will make it so the light doesn't show up.
Like black tape could do it too, presumably.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny to me because my background is filming hidden camera videos, and the people that started this theater, the Upper East Citizens Brigade, had a TV show where they would do a lot of hidden camera stunts, and that one of the owners of the theater, Matt Besser, gave me his hidden camera glasses when like he didn't need them anymore, and they were like these giant, thick, nerdy glasses with like a big, like 240p camera in the middle, but like all those like MTV prank shows from like 2002, like Boiling Points. They all used like those kind of hidden camera glasses, and like it would have been my dream to be able to make hidden camera comedy videos with like normal looking glasses. I mean, I guess Jason, when you're filming people at a Trump rally, you're openly filming them, right?
Yeah, we're filming.
So you couldn't use them. Meta glasses wouldn't help.
No,
you.
There's no practical. I was thinking we did this thing back in like, I don't even know. It was a long time ago, but there was this agency. It's an agency that would like be like, come here. Let's see if you've got what it takes to be an actor. And you can audition here at this agency, or just like we'll take a look at you, and it's a scam. Like you spend like there after they interview you, they bring you back in. They're like, "You did it. You're the best. Just sign here, and it's $3,000, and we're gonna get you out there, and you're gonna be a star." And we were like, "Oh, we wanted to like expose this place, what they're doing." So we bought those things, and it was like a pen that was. It was the size of this microphone. It was like sitting in my pocket like this and like completely obvious. There was like a red light on it. And it, like, obviously we were trying to do the exact same thing. The Meta glasses, I think, are okay if they're used for good, but they're not going to be used for good. It's all creeps wearing them now. Not you.
If you're exposing they're good.
Well, people have said that I've heard a single friend say that people have worn them on dates. They're like filming them. Like, that's creepy.
I think that's okay.
Yeah, you want to replay the footage and be like, she's a five. I thought she was a six.
What did she say? Oh, just watch.
I was vertical drinking and she looked like a seven, but now I'm reviewing the tape.
She likes horizontal drinking because it's so weird.
Horizontal drinking, just lying in a bed with a tube going down your mouth. Yeah, that's awful. All right, let's move on to horse racing. Reading from Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal's newsletter, since 2008, New York State has provided more than $3 billion in state subsidies to the horse racing industry. Each year, another $230 million is funneled back into the industry. As a result of a 2008 deal that the state reached with the New York Racing Association to protect it from bankruptcy. Through this agreement, the state forgave all of the government debts and permitted them to install video slot machines at New York's racetracks. The revenue from these machines, which would normally be remitted to the state to support public education, is instead redirected back to the horse racing industry. This is insane. I hadn't heard of this until I read the story. Has anyone here been to a horse race? Also, you don't have to pay sales tax when you purchase a racehorse in another giveaway the state made to the industry. What the fuck? That's my question. What the fuck?
I've been to one in Jersey. but not up in like Saratoga or anything. And yeah, that seems fucked up.
Doesn't that seem really fucked up?
I went to one at Aqueduct in high school on way too much acid, and it was like basically the worst thing ever. Like it felt like a Bukowski novel in there, and I'm just like tripping balls and like crawling around on the floor, but no one even cared because everybody was so far gone in different ways. And then there's just horses. Oh no, it's awful.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah,
and that's like not the industry, but that's what they're the most famous for. So I've been to several horses. My dad was the principal of a private school, which I attended, and it's all rich people there, and they fucking owned horses. And they would like, I went to a race and like bet on it. And it's like, Jim's dad's horse is about to go race. Like, this is just so exciting. And it wasn't until I left where I was like, holy shit, this is fucking weird. The whole thing is very weird.
Yeah.
But the worst part is the what you're saying about like the slot machines, like stealing money from people, playing these slot machines, and then it goes back into it. There's no taxes being paid. So that's the worst part. Well, they shoot the horses if they break their leg. That's pretty bad too.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I grew up in Ohio and I've been to a lot of, although these are not wealthy horse races. The ones that I went to are not. They are very,
the
very...
The back of a Walmart parking lot?
Basically the back of a Walmart parking lot. Did I work the steak burger stand at a demolition derby at the Franklin County Fair every summer? I did.
That was gonna be the next question.
I did. I see someone nodding. So if you've been to a demolition derby or one of those bad racetracks, I mean, these are like real low class situations. And anyway, it's sad because they really do steal money from people. I mean, these are people who are desperate, people have gambling addictions, alcohol addiction. Like the beer is so cheap there. So a lot of people go and just get drunk and blasted all day. But what the hell? Our government makes these like deals 20 years ago for billions of dollars for these loopholes, because I'm sure there was some horse lobby that met with somebody and we were all just like, all right.
Oh, the horse lobby's terrifying.
the horses hired a lobbyist, as they do.
No, it's just crazy that all of the, like, if we have an industry, we fight to keep, like, we got to save the coal miners. It's like, no, solar energy is now better and cheaper. Like, we don't have to save the coal miners. We don't have to save the carriage horse drivers to bring up other horses in our city, right? They need to find other jobs. Like, we don't need to prop them up. Or let them continue. And like, it's,
well, we could
crazy.
Use some money to support them finding other jobs. It's not that we leave people in the lurch, but we don't need to just let horses be tortured in Central Park in 100-degree heat because we want 100 people to keep a job.
But like, if you have a horse racing like business and you're losing money, like that's your fault. Like, just go out of business. Like, why would we ever give any money towards propping them up? It's insane.
And also, I think a lot of this stuff has gotten like sort of forgotten about. Like, it's like, oh, how cute. It's like old school gambling. And now you can literally gamble on anything you want on your phone, and we're getting children addicted to it nonstop. So this just seems so cute and quaint that you actually would have to go somewhere and put forth some little bit of effort to gamble.
Well, is there still the OTBs? Do you know this? Off track betting, is that done?
I'm sure.
Okay.
Like legally like anything.
It was like a place. It was off Graham Avenue.
7th Avenue, yeah, place, 35th Street. Right.
Yeah.
I think it's gone.
I don't know. I just watched them too high on acid to think straight, let alone bet on anything.
Do you guys remember what OTBs were? They were these little like horrible, almost like check cashing places where you would go and remotely bet. You could watch the screen.
You could bet on the ponies.
Yeah.
You would watch horses on CRT televisions and they would be showing like races happening in whatever time zone horse races were happening around the world. You could bet on them. One final vice question. We have some strip club news. The Hustler Club at 51st Street and 12th Avenue in Manhattan is closing, and the space is set to become the first New York outpost of Peppermint Hippo, a fast-growing national chain of gentlemen's clubs. Peppermint Hippo was founded by a former employee of Spearmint Rhino, another strip club chain that's more well-known. Peppermint Hippo was the name of the parody version of Spearmint Rhino that appeared in the show South Park. Spearmint Rhino has sued Peppermint Hippo over trademark infringement. Should you be able to open a business with the name of a TV show used to parody an existing business?
I choose chaos. Yes.
Yes. In cases, is it clear? Popular chain called Spearmint Rhino. South Park parodies it with Peppermint Hippo. And then someone's like, that's a good name. I'll open up strip clubs based on the fake name on South Park. Should you be able to do that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's beautiful. It's like a testament to sort of parody or, you know, like the dumb, absurd choices that some writers in some room made. And then we're going to have like a real world consequence because of it. It reminds me of the Mighty Ducks being a real NHL franchise.
But they got money for that. The South Park writers, are they getting anything for this? That would be my question.
You would think the South Park writers or Trey and Matt from South Park could sue Peppermint Hippo.
They need the money.
They might be getting some free lap dances for all we know. Maybe they're looped
but
in.
But it's a real, it's not a parody strip club. Because that sounds funny. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Strip club
I don't know.
A strip club where
we're doing this ironically.
Yeah, it's ironic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people go to a strip club acting like they're going to it ironically.
$700 later.
I've only been to strip clubs ironically. Right? Yeah.
Do you remember Billy's Topless?
No, what's Billy's Topless?
It was like a weird amateur strip club on the west side. Not on the highway. It was like somewhere on the west side, though. But they had like a shower curtain, and everyone was amateur, and then you would go there. But by the end of the night, you were the stripper. It was kind of what you're describing.
It was ironic. Yeah. Williamsburg Hipsters strip club.
Kind of.
Sounds much darker.
With maybe a little bit of human trafficking, because they all have like a little bit of
just a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, I'm so happy that we're keeping the character of the neighborhood, you know? Really, as someone who doesn't live too far from this, just super happy that we're, you know, keeping our culture real in Hell's Kitchen.
If you don't want to go to Peppermint Hippo in Hell's Kitchen, there is a Spearmint Rhino in Chelsea. Not too far away.
Good. So we need more.
You have options.
I hope they keep the Doric columns of Hustlers. Yes. Those are iconic. Those should be landmarked.
The Hustler Club, yes. It very much looks like a Greek
It's been
landmark.
There so long.
Not too far from the Intrepid, so great family day.
Yeah.
If anyone's looking for something to
All
do.
All right, can we give it up for our panel, please? Real quick, we're out of time, but everybody plug something. Evan, plug your show.
The Power Joker's next show is 9:26 at Caveat in the Lower East Side. We'll be talking about sex workers' rights.
I'm not going to plug anything, but donate to the ACLU. It's a weird time in America.
Love it.
Do something good.
Gothamist.com and listen to WNYC.
All right, let's give it for our panel one more time. We want to thank Seamus in the booth, the UCB for having us here, Tyler Walker who did our theme song, you guys for coming out on a stormy night, and please remember to vote
in midterm elections.
Good night, everybody.
Everything's wrong with the universe, accepting change is hard. Everything's bad and it's getting worse, but not in my
UCB, thank you so much. We ask you please safely exit the theaters. We have another show coming right up.